against politicizing public television. The chairman of the public station in Dallas was an industrialist named Ralph Rogers, a Republican but no party hack, who saw the White House intimidation as an assault on freedom of the press and led a nationwide effort to stop it. The chairman at the time of the CPB was a former Republican congressman, Thomas Curtis, from here in St. Louis, from here in Missouri, who was also a principled man. He resigned, claiming White House interference. Within a few months, the crisis was over. CPB maintained its independence. PBS grew in strength, and Richard Nixon would face impeachment and resign for violating the public trust and not just public broadcasting. I once asked a friend of mine, a wise old man in Washington, what he'd learned from life. Could he reduce it to one sentence? And he said, yes, there ain't no justice in the world. Now get on with it. But here was cosmic justice, paradoxically. The very, talk about justice, the very Public Affairs Center for Television that Nixon had tried to kill, Impact, put PBS on the map by rebroadcasting in prime time each day's Watergate hearings, drawing huge ratings night after night, and establishing PBS as an ally of democracy. We should still be doing that sort of thing. C-SPAN, bless its heart, shouldn't be the only channel, shouldn't be the only channel that lets us see how democracy works. That was 33 years ago, and I thought the current CPB board would like to hear and talk about the importance of standing up to political interference. I was wrong. They wouldn't meet with me. I tried three times and failed three times, and it was all downhill after that. I was naive, I guess. I simply never imagined that any CPB chairman, Democrat or Republican, would cross the line from resisting White House pressure to carrying it out for the White House. But that's what Kenneth Tomlinson has been doing. On Fox News, he denied he's carrying out a White House mandate or that he's ever had any conversation with any Bush administration official about PBS. But the New York Times reports that he enlisted Karl Rove to help kill a proposal that would have put on the CPB board people with experience in local radio and television. It was also reported that on the recommendation of administration officials, he hired a White House flack, I know the genre, named Mary Catherine Andrews as a senior staff member at CPB. While she was still reporting to Karl Rove at the White House, she set up CPB's new ombudsman office and had a hand in hiring the two people who will fill it, one of them who once worked for Tomlinson, the other a very respected journalist. But this is an anomaly. A political organization can't have an ombudsman. CPB is not a journalistic or news-gathering organization. PBS can have one. WGBH can have one. WNET can have one. But for a political organization to have two ombudsmen, a one ombudsman or a dozen? I would like to give Mr. Tomlinson the benefit of the doubt, but I can't. According to a book written about the Reader's Digest when he was its editor-in-chief, he surrounded himself with other right-wingers, a pattern he's now following for the staff at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I've already mentioned Ms. Andrews. Well, for acting president, he hired Ken Ferrer from the FCC, who was Michael Powell's enforcer when Powell was deciding how to go about allowing the big media companies to get even bigger. One of Ferrer's jobs was to engage in tactics designed to dismiss any serious objection to more media monopolies. And according to Eric Altman, Ferrer was even more contemptuous than Michael Powell of public participation in the process of determining media ownership. It was Ferrer who decided to issue a protective order designed to keep secret the market research on which the Republican majority on the commission based their vote to permit greater media consolidation. Now, let me say, it is not likely that with a guy like that as the chief operating officer of the CPB, you're going to find any public television producers saying, hey, let's do something on how big media is affecting democracy. Because what this leads to is preventive capitulation. As everyone knows, Mr. Tomlinson has put up a considerable sum of money, allegedly over $5 million, your money, for the new weekly broadcast featuring Paul Gigot and the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. Now, Gigot is a smart journalist, a sharp editor, and a fine fellow. I had him on Now several times, and I even proposed to PBS that he become a regular contributor on our show, The Conversation of Democracy, remember? All stripes. But I confess to some puzzlement that the Wall Street Journal, which in the past editorialized to cut PBS off the public tap, is now being subsidized by American taxpayers when its parent company, Dow Jones, had revenues in the first quarter of this year of $400 million. I thought public television was supposed to be an alternative to commercial media, not a funder of it. But in this weird deal, you get a glimpse of the kind of programming Mr. Tomlinson apparently seems to prefer. A loan of the big major newspapers, the Wall Street Journal has no op-ed page where different opinions can compete with its right-wing editorials. The Journal's PBS broadcast is just as homogenous, right-wingers talking to each other. I think, Bob McChesney, you ought to demand equal time for Katrina Vandenhoevel and the editors of The Nation, or for Amy Goodman's Democracy. Now, there's an idea for you. You want public broadcasting to be balanced against all these elite establishment voices that get heard? Get Amy on public television. We didn't know this a year ago. We just learned it from the New York Times that last year Mr. Tomlinson had spent $10,000 to hire a contractor who would watch my show and report on political bias. That's right. He spent $10,000 of your money to hire a guy to watch Now to find out who my guests were and what my stories were. $10,000. Gee, Ken, for $2.50 a week, you could pick up a copy of TV Guide on the newsstand. A subscription is even cheaper, and I would have sent you a coupon that can save you up to 62%. Or, for that matter, Ken, all you had to do was watch the show. Or you could go online where the listings are posted. Hell, Ken, you could have called me collect, and I would have told you who we were having on the show. $10,000. That 10 grand would pay for the books in an elementary school classroom or an upgrade of its computer lab. But having sent that cash, what did he find? Only Mr. Tomlinson knows. He's apparently decided not to share the results with his staff or with the board or even to leak it to Robert Novak. I mean, when a right-winger won't leak to Robert Novak, you know he doesn't want it to go up the food chain of the right-wing echo chamber. The public paid for that study. But Ken Tomlinson acts as if he owns it. You can watch my bias. You can watch my mistakes. You can watch everything I do right there on the air. We have the funders listed. Everything is there. It's all listed. But he won't do it. In a May 10th op-ed piece in Reverend Moon's conservative Washington Times, Ken Tomlinson maintained he had not released the findings because public broadcasting is such a delicate institution. He did not want to, quote, damage public broadcasting's image with controversy. Where I come from in Texas, we shovel that kind of stuff every day. As we learned this week, that's not the only news Mr. Tomlinson tried to keep to himself. And as reported by Jeff Chester's Center for Digital Democracy, there were two public opinion surveys commissioned by CPB, but not released to the media, not even to PBS and NPR. According to a source who talked to Salam.com, the first results were too good, and Tomlinson didn't believe them. After the Iraq War, the board commissioned another round of polling, and they thought they'd get worse results, but they didn't. This is the man, by the way, who was running the Voice of America back in 1984 when a fanatic named Charlie Wick was politicizing the United States Information Agency, of which Voice of America was a part. It turned out there was a blacklist of people who had been removed from the list of prominent Americans sent abroad to lecture on behalf of America and the USIA. What's more, it was discovered that evidence as to how those people were chosen to be on the blacklist, more than 700 documents, had been shredded. Among those on the blacklist of journalists, writers, scholars, and politicians were dangerous left-wing subversives like Walter Cronkite, James Baldwin, Gary Hart, Ralph Nader, Ben Bradley, Coretta Scott King, and David Brinkley. The person who took the fall for the blacklist was another right-winger. He resigned. Shortly thereafter, so did Kenneth Tomlinson, who was one of six people in the agency with the authority to see the list of potential speakers and allowed to strike people's names. Let me be clear. I don't know. And there's no record of what position Kenneth Tomlinson took, whether he supported the blacklist or opposed it, or what he thinks of it now. I actually hoped Bill O'Reilly would have asked him about it. When he appeared on the O'Reilly Factor, he didn't. Instead, Tomlinson went on attacking me, with O'Reilly egging him on, and went on denying he was carrying out a partisan mandate. The only time you could be sure he was telling the truth was at the end of the broadcast when he said to O'Reilly, "We love your show." We? He's entitled to his opinion. He's entitled to his politics. He's entitled to contribute exclusively, as he does, to conservative candidates for public office. That's all fine. Our political system encourages it and tolerates it. But he is not entitled to stand in judgment on other people's bias. I wrote Kenneth Tomlinson. I asked him to sit down with me for an hour on PBS and talk about all this. I said, "You can choose the moderator, although I don't see that we need one, two civilized human beings sitting and talking about these important issues affecting the future of a medium we both profess to love." I said, "You can choose the guidelines. But there's one thing in particular," and I'm about to close. "There's one thing in particular I would like to ask him about." In that op-ed essay in the Washington Times, Ken Tomlinson talks of a phone call from an old friend complaining about Bill Moyer's bias. The friend explained that the foundation he heads made a six-figure contribution to his local public television station for digital conversion. But he declared, and I'm quoting Tomlinson, "There would be no more contributions until something was done about the network's bias." Apparently, that's Kenneth Tomlinson's method of governance. Money talks and buys the influence it wants. But I'd like to ask him to listen to a different voice. This letter came to me last year, 5 pages of handwriting. It said, in essence, and I'm going to do some direct quoting, "After the worst sneak attack in our history, there's not been a moment to reflect, a moment to let the horror resonate, to feel the pain and regroup as humans. No, since I lost my husband on 9/11, not only our family's world, but the whole world seems to have gotten even worse than that tragic day. On 9/11, my husband was not on duty. He was home with me, having coffee. Our own family story on that day is long and complicated. My daughter and grandson, living only 5 blocks from the tower, had to be evacuated with terror all around. My other daughter, near the Brooklyn Bridge, my son in high school. But my Charlie took off like a lightning bolt to be with his men from the Special Operations Command. 'Bring my gear to the plaza,' he told his aide immediately after the first plane struck the North Tower. In comparison to using semantical technicalities, passing the responsibility, or not having all the facts, he took action based on the responsibility he felt for his job and his men and for those towers he loved. If anything happens in the firehouse at any time, even if the captain isn't on duty and is on vacation, that captain is responsible for everything that goes on there 24/7. Why then, she asked, are the people in Washington responsible for nothing? Why do they pass the blame for what happened that day, for the failure of the system, for the torture at Abu Ghraib, for sending young soldiers into an immoral war, under-equipped, under-trained, and under-protected? Why is there no leadership? We need more programs like now to wake us up, she said. Such programs must continue amidst the sea of false images and name-calling that divide America now. Such programs give us hope that search will continue to get this imperfect human condition onto a higher plane. So thank you. Without public broadcasting, all we would call news would be very carefully controlled propaganda. Let's take public broadcasting back. Take it back. Take it back from threats, from interference, from those who would tell us we can only think what they command us to think. We're big kids. We can handle controversy and diversity. Whether it's a political or religious points of view, or two loving lesbian moms and their kids visited by a cartoon rabbit. We're not too fragile or insecure to see America and the world entire for all their magnificent and sometimes violent confusion. There used to be a thing or commodity we put a store by, John Steinbeck wrote. It was called the people. Thank you.
You were just listening to Bill Moyers in defense of public broadcasting. This classic from the AR archives was recorded at the Conference on Media Reform in St. Louis. Bill Moyers was a renowned journalist, commentator, and staunch defender of public broadcasting. He was the winner of more than 30 Emmy Awards. He passed away in late June. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, an independent nonprofit in our 40th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Amy Goodman, Claudia de la Cruz, Chris Hedges, Azad Issa, Vijay Prashad, and Arundhati Roy. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Bill Moyers in Defense of Public Broadcasting, and for Noam Chomsky's classic book, How the World Works, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. To get them, just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Special thanks to Martin Folker. Joe Rich is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. We go out with Ella Fitzgerald and Duke Ellington. Take the A Train.
Sugar Hill way up in Harlem. Yeah. You miss the A train. You find you've missed the quickest way to Harlem. Hurry, get on, now it's coming. Listen to those rails a-thrumming. All aboard, get on the A train. Soon you will be on Sugar Hill in Harlem.
Hello, it's 6 p.m. Welcome to Where the Wired Things Are on WRCT Pittsburgh. This is Alina, CD Key. First up, we have South by Hippocampus.
Thank you.
You're listening to Where the Wired Things Are on WRCT Pittsburgh. That was South by Hippocampus. I think that was the first Hippocampus song I ever heard, and they got me. I'm a big fan. I actually saw them here in Pittsburgh live, earlier this year in February, and they were great. Next up is Vices by Sarah and the Sundays. Also the first song I heard by Sarah and the Sundays.
Quiet, I'm keeping score.
That was Raspberry by Group Love. Group Love's got a lot of great hits. I'm sure you know many of them. Very popular. I think my dad actually showed me Group Love. And in high school, I'm pretty sure I wrote a review of their album Deleter, but I wasn't really that invested in my high school newspaper, so I'm pretty sure I just like adapted a review I saw online, but still give it a listen. Next up is Speed Racer by Hers. Was Peachtrees by Axe and the Hatchet Men. Now I have some public service announcements for you all. First, Each year, 40% of food in the U.S. never gets eaten. With the average American family of four spending $1,500 per year on food that they throw away, and each individual throwing away over 24 pounds of food per month. Wasting food wastes everything. Water, labor, fuel, and money. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. Learn how to better plan, store, and cook your food at SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by Natural Resources Defense Council and WRCT. Now, ask yourself, what kind of friend are you? Are you a work friend? Are you a friend that hangs out on weekends? Are you a chill out and watch TV friend? Are you that friend who shows up on moving day? Or are you the kind of friend who's there for someone dealing with a mental illness? Be there for them because your support will give them a much greater chance of recovery. Mental illness. What a difference a friend makes. For more information on how to support someone dealing with a mental illness, go to whatadifference.org. Brought to you by the Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council. Next up is Vampire Empire by Big Thief. I really wanted to play Simulation Swarm. I feel like it just fit the playlist and the fall weather really well. I realize I've already played it on air, so another great option. Vampire Empire by Big Thief.
Feels
Was Davy Crochet by the Backseat Lovers, and before that was Sick Dogs by Hey Nothing. Now, WRCT is supported by Row House Cinema. Row House Cinema is a single-screen theater in the historic Lawrenceville neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Each week, they choose a new movie theme ranging from classic, cult, foreign, animation, fantasy, and more. Their concessions feature natural popcorn with real butter, craft beer in the adjoining bottle shop, and vegan options. Row House Cinema is located at 4115 Butler Street in Lawrenceville. For more information, visit their website at rowhousecinema.com or call 412-904-3225. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Next up is Instant Crush Unpeeled by Cage the Elephant. This is their cover of Daft Punk's Instant Crush, which is a phenomenal song itself, but I think Cage the Elephant has a unique take on it.
Just never die.
Instant Crush Unpeeled by Cage the Elephant. I don't know, love it or hate it. I think it's a cool version of the song. I think both this and the original by Daft Punk are phenomenal songs. Next up is The Place Where He Inserted the Blade by Black Country New Road. Now, you really have to follow me for this song. It's a little long, but I think it's really amazing. Great story, so I hope you enjoy Black Country New Road. The Place Where He Inserted the Blade by Black Country New Road. I recommend checking them out. They have a lot of really great music, and they recently released an album. This is from some of their older music, but give them a listen. Next up is Texas Hold'em by Rainbow Kitten Surprise off of their most recent album.
I was writing this down.